The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
I prefer this one as a concise book that board members would do well to read. This is certainly is a good one. And I'm drawing particularly from chapters 4, 5, and 6. Chapter 4 is on leadership. And I'd just like to read a quote or two out of this before we go to our outline, and hopefully more outlines will be here by that time. The mark of a leader, the attribute that puts him in a position to show the way for others, is that he is better than most to point the way. And so when we talk about the functions of a board, I think that's one of the things they do. We're talking leadership, we're talking pointing the way. Perhaps the right picture of this is the person, picture a group of men who are walking, taking a little walk on the mountainside, and they're planning to go 20 miles. And they break into a little clearing, and the leader, the older men, the people who are giving the direction, stop for a few moments, and they say, "Okay, we're not going the rest of the miles, but do you see that mountain out there? You see where you're headed?" And they take the other men, and they get them together, and they get them to fasten their minds on that distant goal. They set that for them, and then they ask them, "Do you have what you need? Do you have an axe? Do you have some matches? Do you have this? Do you have that? Do you have the other thing?" They make sure they're prepared to go. They give them the vision. They point the way, and they say, "Go!" And then they go. Okay, that's the idea here. Now let's see, just another quote or so from Peter Drucker. He said that effectiveness does not come from solving problems, but from exploiting opportunities. And I'd like to let that emphasis with you. I hope by the time we're finished that you have that idea about a board meeting. A board meeting is not primarily to solve problems. Unfortunately, most board meetings end up being that. A board meeting is more effective if it sets a direction, if it sets a goal, if it exploits opportunities, is what the writer here says. In other words, the opportunity is at hand, and the board leadership senses that, and they say, "Let's go this direction." Let's do, this is not school, but I'll just give you an example for us. Here at Faith Builders, this work in Poland that we are somewhat involved with was an opportunity that all of a sudden stared us in the face. Were we ready for it? Were we prepared for it? Did we have the money for it? Did we have the personnel for it? The answer to all of those questions is no. But the opportunity was there. And so the leadership of this school said, "We will exploit the opportunity, so to speak. We'll point that direction. We'll go that direction." That's a lot different than sitting in a board meeting and trying to solve the little detailed problems that may come up in a school. Now, don't misunderstand me. I know that you have to field those questions too. But if you want to have an effective board meeting, and I mean board meeting after board meeting after board meeting, at the end of the year, were we effective? Ask yourself this question. Did we recognize the opportunities that presented themselves this year? And were we able to take the leadership of the school, the administrator, the principal, the teachers, and point to that opportunity and say, "Go that direction," and then give them the skills and give them the necessary tools to get that done? Alexander Solzhenitsyn, I don't know if you recognize the name or not, the Russian dissident who move to the United States. "Whenever the tissue of life is woven of legalistic relationships, this creates an atmosphere of spiritual mediocrity that paralyzes men's noblest impulses." How does that hit? What's that have to do with a board meeting? Listen again. "Whenever the tissue of life is woven of legalistic relationships, this creates an atmosphere of spiritual mediocrity that paralyzes men's noblest impulses." So if your board meeting is a legalistic relationship type of thing, now we are going to get together and we have our agendas and we're going to do this and this and this and this and this, and it tends to be a legalistic type of thing. We just turn the machinery, and it cranks something out the other end. Well, then this will lead to spiritual mediocrity that paralyzes men's noblest impulses. Board meetings should somehow go beyond that legalistic thing. Thank you, Katrina. Could you bring those in? If you do not have a handout, please raise your hand, and Katrina will try to see to it that you get one. So I hope you're getting the drift here. I'd like to inspire you to go back to your home communities and hold board meetings that have a sense, a greater sense of leadership to them than just simply merely problem solving. And again, I don't want to discredit the idea that you are going to have to solve some problems in board meetings, certainly. But above and beyond that, if you're effective, you point, you direct, you show them where to go. Guiding an action from the idea stage to an approved resolution requires skill in what is commonly known as statesmanship. Now, in our world today, what we hear from the politicians, the difficulty is we do not have true statesmen anymore working in political circles. And I don't want to say there aren't any, but we wander. Okay? In the quote again, guiding an action from the idea stage to an approved resolution requires skill in what is commonly known as statesmanship. Now, Brandon talked about choosing board members. And I don't want to give you the impression that in a political sense you're a statesman. But I wonder sometimes if we don't underemphasize the role that the board plays in terms of leadership, in terms of ideas, in terms of guidance in that, in terms of enabling people to do it, get that job done. I have no idea how it goes in your communities, but I know how it was in my home community where you're going to have an election of a board member. And so this would be announced throughout all the churches, going to elect a board member. Back in my home community, the 3 or 4 churches involved. Everybody just kind of sighed and took a deep breath. And it wasn't because that they thought they were going to get on the board so much as it was just kind of a pain to get together and elect a board member. Well, I think it's a great deal more important than that myself. I personally think that we ought to put a lot more time and effort into this. We want statesmen on our boards. Enough said about that. Purposeful, effective board meetings. I'm looking now at the paper that you have. My introduction here actually overlaps with what Brandon had to say right at the end of his discussion. However, as all good teachers know, it's variety and repetition, isn't it? And so you repeat it and you do it in just a little bit of a different way, and that helps to rivet it in the minds of the people who are listening or the student. So I'll just hurry through the introduction here but mention it. The task of leadership, which, remember, is the emphasis I want here. I want you to leave the room thinking we are leaders and we're going to provide some leadership. Number one is visioning. Number two is aligning. And number three is motivating. Just three words. Next time you go to a board meeting, remember these three words. Visioning, aligning, and motivating. That's your job. Okay? Visioning is hard work. Not say much about it right now because I have a topic tomorrow morning on developing and implementing vision. That is perhaps the hardest task in any organization. If you have a live, active, forward-moving organization, I'm using organization for lack of another term, I'll guarantee you, you have in your board and in the administrative team, you have people who have vision. They see beyond themselves. Okay? Number two is aligning. That just simply means you get the resources in line to get the job done. And that is the board's responsibility. Okay? I echo what Brandon said. The board chairman back home, and I was very, very fortunate in the Chambersburg area for my years of teaching there to have an outstanding board and board chairman who did very, very well. And I don't know. I know sometimes people find fault with you folks. But I do know some boards that have worked very, very, very well. And I hope that's what's happening in your community. Well, at any rate, what I was going to say is the chairman back there, he would periodically come to the school and stop by and just talk to me personally or through the day, the end of the day, 3 o'clock. He'd come pulling in. He was a salesman for a machinery dealership, and so he had a little freedom to do this. And he'd just stop by and come walking in, sit down, talk to me a little while. And sometimes we'd be talking about this or that or the other thing, and I'd say, well, that'll cost so much. And so he'd look me right now, and he'd say, look, that is not your problem. Okay, if this is what the school needs to do and you need so-and-so, and it's going to cost $500, the $500 is my problem. It is your problem to see to it that this begins to happen. I'll make sure that the right things are aligned. The money is there or whatever to see to it that it's going to happen. I always appreciated that. And thirdly, motivating. Don't underestimate this one. Even if you have an outstanding principal who is kind of self-motivated, outstanding teachers who are kind of self-motivated, it still feels awfully good to sit in a board meeting and to hear somebody just kind of rise up and give a prophetic voice about what needs to happen in a school and provide some motivation. I don't know if you have devotions in your board meetings or not. I don't like the word devotions because I don't know, it brings up some of the wrong pictures. I don't know what... Something, you know, we read the Bible and we do this and we do that and we do the other thing, which is all good. But some kind of a motivational word, prophetic word, if I could use that terminology, for your teachers is very, very, very good. I don't mean that should dominate the board meeting. I'm just simply saying that in those first 10 minutes, if there can be a bright, cheery smile on the face of the board chairman, and a twinkle in his eye, and a little excerpt that he pulled from somewhere. He read a little quote somewhere that's encouraging to teachers. And he shares that. And he said, I just wanted you teachers to know this. This is the way I feel. This is what I think about it. Now, I want to encourage you to take up the mantle and get on with work. That's motivation. Okay, you need to provide that as well. Responsibilities of the board to identify the vision and the mission. We already talked about that. To delegate the implementation of the mission, and to ensure the availability of necessary resources. All right, let's just go right into the idea then of how you actually have a purposeful, effective board meeting. How I got... Jonas, can you figure out how I got on this thing to give this little talk? Now, I'll tell you why I asked that question. Anybody who knows me well knows that I hate administration like you wouldn't believe. I just as well teach all day long and let somebody else do the figuring out, push the pencil and tell me when I should do what. So it feels a little awkward for me to be talking about board meetings. It really is not my cup of tea, as they say. But here we go. To have an effective board, you have to have a good organization. And I say that not because I suspect that there are people sitting here not well organized, but I am surprised at times to get into some communities and you ask about the board chairman or the secretary or the treasurer or something like this, and they look at each other and they're not sure who's doing what. Well, you ought to know. This involves normally drawing up a little flow chart. A little flow chart is just simple blocks. Well, here's the board. And this blows down the principal and so on. At least if you have some kind of organization that says, this is what this person does, this is what this person does, and this is what this person does. Now when you come to board meeting, you at least know what we're supposed to do. Now, I'm bad enough at this, so when I'm talking about these issues, don't get the idea that I'm pointing at other people. I know how this feels, to go to a meeting and not be ready for it. Organizationally, even, not know who's going to do what, and you sit there and spend 15, 20 minutes trying to hash that out. People's time is worth something, you know? And so if you have 6 people, 7 people, 10 people meeting, and it's 20 minutes that you wasted trying to get that figured out, well, that's 200. It's 10 people. That's 200 man minutes. We went down the tube. Okay, just simply because we didn't have our act together. So clearly defined roles and job descriptions. Number 2 is rules that govern board functions. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, In our community, I'll just use my home community as an example to demonstrate what I mean by governing by rules that govern the board functions. There were 5 elected board members. They could not be ordained brethren. Okay, now that sounds a little funny to you, I know, but that's because we had, in addition to the 5 board members, we had 3. Was it 2 or 3? 3 members from the ministry of the churches that were patrons of the school. They were not elected. They were appointed by the ministerial bodies. But this was all written down. These were the rules that governed the board. Okay, we knew what the procedure was. We elect 5. They were not going to be ordained brothers because we wanted to have the patrons, the average rank and file patron of the school, involved. Of course, we felt as though the leadership of the church needed to have an adequate say or an adequate voice in what was happening in the school. Hence, the ministry appointed 3 members. And they came to every board meeting. Were they voting members? See, that's a question you have to answer. Do they vote? Don't they vote? Or don't they vote? Just exactly what is their function? And this can get to be a little scary if you don't know. So you get there and issues come up and you're trying to decide how you're going to decide. Well, it's nice if you can just refer to something, kind of your constitution or whatever, that says these are the rules that govern the board. Okay? They are voting members, or they are not voting members, or they have veto power. Something of that nature. I found it in our community it worked very, very, very well. Those members were not actually, the ministerial body was not a voting member. They were not voting members. However, they did virtually hold veto power. I don't think I ever heard it exercised because they were there. And when the discussions came up, they heard what was being discussed. They had every opportunity to say, wait a minute, brothers, where are you headed with this? I don't think the ministerial body is going to like this, you know, if you make a decision of that nature. So normally before a thing ever got to a vote, it had already been discussed thoroughly. We knew what the ministerial body thought and perceived in this issue and were able to make a sensible decision from there. So I'm not here to tell you what the rules should be. You need to know that for your community. I'm just telling you that you should have some kind of written constitution to make your board meetings flow smoothly. Elements of an effective board meeting. So now we're actually going to have a meeting. What's going to make it tick? Well, number one, a clearly defined purpose for this meeting. Now, I know in our typical community, at least in our community, we had a meeting once a month. But for years, and this was a little bit before my time, and I don't claim the credit for having seen a change, but before my time, boy, I remember the board members talking about meetings that would last until 12 o'clock and until 1 o'clock, and these things were lasting half the night. And board members, and they were, I don't know, they had all kinds of hassles, and I remember the story that one night one of the board members actually got irritated and walked out of the meeting, went out, sat in the car for a while, and came back in. One of the reasons that happens is because there's not a clearly defined purpose to begin with. And what happens, I heard Brandon say this, and I'm going to repeat it. Boards were never intended to manage a school. Did you notice that is not in this first list? Visioning, aligning, and motivating, but not managing. Now, I want to be real careful here because I know some of you may be from a school that's very small. And you might not even have a male teacher in the school. There are schools like that, a lot of them, in our Mennonite circles. And there it feels like it calls for more management outside of, let's say, the teachers or the faculty, or maybe there isn't even a principal that is resident there in the school day after day. I understand that. And I'm not in any way suggesting here that that's a bad deal. I mean, a community has to know what they can do. But by and large, a typical school, 40, 50 students, 60, 70, 80, 100, or a little better, who has a principal, boards should stay out of the day-by-day management affairs. If you find yourself needing to manage the school, that means you really should look for another principal, or you should help him to learn how to manage it himself. Okay? What I mean by this is, okay, if a child needs, I'll just give you an example. If a child needs discipline, maybe they need to be spanked. I find it really hard to believe that if you have an adult male in the school, he's 30, he's 35 years old, he's had some experience. I don't see why you should have to call the board and ask them how this should be done or if it should be done and so forth and so on. That's management. What you're doing now is you're managing the school. Okay? That should be delegated. The management of that school should be delegated to some other person. Now, I'm acknowledging you probably have structures where that won't work. But in the typical school, you've got a principal. He does that, not you. So if you're going to a board meeting and you feel like you have to take care of the management affairs, you're going to be there till midnight. If it's any size of school, because there are just enough problems that come up from day to day. If Jonas Salter took every one of those management issues to his board, I'll guarantee you they'd be there a long time. That's just the way it is. You want to get as much of that out of your board meetings and delegate it to your principal or somebody in charge that you can. Now again, don't misunderstand me. There are going to be some issues that come to you you have to deal with. But I'm saying if that makes up so much of your board meeting, then you need to rearrange and get those management affairs out of the board. What happened at Anchor School, and this was before I came along, so that's why I'm making sure that you understand that I'm not taking the credit for this. But by the time I began to teach at Anchor, there was a principal there who was doing very well, knew how to manage a school. Board meetings lasted until we got together at 7 o'clock, and sometimes by 7:45, they didn't quite know what else to do. We were done with the issues. I'm not so sure that our board wasn't expecting the principal or the administrator to also do the visioning and some things that they should have been doing, and that's the reason why it really got shortened down the other way. During my years of administrating there at Anchor Christian School, I don't remember of ever getting out of a meeting after 9. We had a few that ran into 9 o'clock or something like that, but never after that. Again, don't misunderstand me. There may be some very, very critical issues come up, and you're going to have to sit there for a while and work on them. I don't mean to be suggesting that this is not something that would ever happen. But if it's meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, that you're running a long time, I suspect what's happening is you're managing the school and not leading the school, not directing the school. Get out of management mode is my point there. And the way to do that is to begin to clearly define your purpose. We are meeting tonight for this specific reason. Now, I know we have our monthly meetings just to kind of deal with the issues. But what I encouraged our school board to do, and some of the chairmen were in there long enough that they just got used to this, you know what the issues are month by month that you have to be thinking about. Graduation, you start thinking about that in April or whatever. And this is written right into kind of the yearly agenda. Tonight we're meeting, we know that we have these three things that we've got to deal with. We've got to be thinking about, are we ready for next month's board meeting, not board meeting, but board member election, so forth and so on. Doesn't mean there won't be any other issues, but make sure you have a clearly defined purpose. Number two, clear role assignments. We already discussed that one. Who's going to do what? Number three, a prepared agenda. Now, I've had some experience in this in two levels. The one level was as principal back home at Anchor Christian School, and the other level has been as director here at Faith Builders. And it's a little more complex here, but I have found back home, that smaller meeting, you could kind of just, foot your way through it. But boy, the larger it gets, the more important it is to have a prepared agenda. I think Brandon talked about the fact that he would go, he calls it doing dinner. I'm a little too old for that, you know. We ate dinner or something, but you know, they do dinner now or whatever they do. with his board chairman. Well, my board chairman didn't do that. He would just, the night of board meetings, as I said, 3 o'clock, school is over, I could expect Nathan Wadle to walk through the door of my classroom. And because I hadn't gone home yet, he'd come in and say, "Well, Brother Melvin, what are the issues we should talk about tonight?" We didn't do this in a real formal way, but he wanted to know, what are the issues that need to be discussed this evening? And so we'd sit down and talk a little bit about. Some of them we'd toss out, say, "Well, I don't think that's really important." Other ones we'd say, "Let's keep that in." So between the two of us, we would decide we're going to discuss 1, 2, 3, and 4. Didn't mean that there were no other issues that would come up. He always opened it up to other people, and maybe something else had come up. But we knew what the issues were, and that's very, very important. The more complex this gets, the more important it is to write it down, get it out ahead of time. Here at Faith Builders, for example, we get our agendas. We do our reports ahead of time, a month or two. Before board meeting, we send out those reports out from each of the administrative levels, and the board members can read over that. They can talk agenda. Then the board chairman calls me and talks to me, and we work through getting an agenda together. So the more complex it is, the more important it is to talk about what are the important issues. Now, in your home communities, you probably don't have people traveling many miles. But again, I'm time conscious. And I hate inefficient things. So don't you just sit and maul and go around. You don't go anywhere with it, you know. And the way to avoid that is to be sure that you get a prepared agenda together. Number 4, efficient execution of the agenda. This is very typical. I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new here. Normally, the minutes of the previous meeting are read. I'll say this for whatever it's worth. It's important to have somebody who does well with the preparation of these previous minutes. Okay, somebody who knows how to get the essentials down, get them down in a concise manner, read them off so that you know what to do with what had happened previously. I've had this problem occasionally where the person who was responsible for doing this would not get the minutes to me until the next meeting. And I don't know how many of you here are responsible for doing minutes. But do your principal a favor, or do the person who is managing your school a favor. If you do minutes for your meetings, get them to him the next day. Well, that's a big order maybe, but it sure helps a lot. At Anchor School, we didn't have that. However, the board chairman would always call me the next morning. Our meetings were normally conducted. We came in and all the teachers were there, and I was there, and the board chairman would go down and ask the teachers, start through an agenda kind of like this, and ask the teachers what their issues were and so forth and so on. And then we were dismissed, and then they would finish up, take about 15 minutes if they had any decisions needed to make, and then they were dismissed. Then the next morning, chairman would call me and say, "Okay, the issue number 1, number 2, number 3, remember we talked about, okay, this is what we decided, or this is what we'd like to suggest to you." Now, that was, in a sense, verbal minutes, okay? But, of course, the more complex it gets, the more difficult that is. And my point is, minutes don't help an administrator very much if he doesn't get them for 6 months. Periodically, this happens to me. I don't have minutes in my hand, and somebody will say, "What was the decision on so-and-so?" And I'll say, "Well, you know, I don't really quite remember. Let's check the minutes." And I go checking in my notebook, and I say, "They're not here." "Oh, that's right. They weren't sent yet." So then I go back and look at my scribbling and scratching around that I did during the meeting, okay, to try to figure out what actually did happen. Well, if you're a board chairman or if you're responsible for minutes, my comment is, look, get them out real quick. It's fresh in your mind anyway, isn't it? The next day or that night yet or whenever it is, get them done. Get them done and get them to the appropriate people so they know what the decisions are, or they know what they have the direction they need. About what happens next. Number 2, reports. Again, this probably is not important to your school. To larger schools it is. This will save hours of time in meetings if you have good reports done. I have more to say about that this afternoon in evaluating schools. Number 3, typically we go to old business and make sure that everything that has been discussed before has been dealt with and we're ready to move on. Then we go to the new business. And the new business is normally set forth in the agenda. Then we have an executive session. Now, I don't know what your school does, but I would really I think this is good. As I already explained to you, the way we did it, Anchor, is the school board met. The full faculty was there, including myself. Okay. Board chairman opens the meeting, does the minutes, does all of these things, and then he would ask me, what do you have to share? Because normally he expected me to do the agenda thing. So I'd say 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we talk about those. And after we finished with those, he'd go right down around the teachers. Board chairman would do this. He'd say, David, what do you have? And these are the other teachers sitting there. They had every opportunity to say what they wanted to in the board meeting. And David might say, well, I'm planning to take a field trip next month. And according to our bylaws, that needed to be approved by the board. And so he would say that and explain a little bit about it. Board chairman would ask the rest of them, what do you think? Is this okay? Do you have any suggestions? And sometimes they would say, David, how do you plan to, what mode of transportation are you using? And they say, well, I'm working on that. And then he might say, could you bring your van and haul some children and you bring your van or something like that and you work it out. They approve it. You go on. After we're all done with that, then typically the board chairman would dismiss the faculty with the exception of me. Okay, as administrator of the school, and then I would be there, and then he'd talk a little bit more about any particular items they thought were important, and then I would be dismissed, and then comes executive session, okay, where they have the freedom to think and talk about things that might be a little sensitive if I were there, okay, and I really think it's good for a board to have an executive session. on the other hand, I don't think anything real sneaky should happen there. I think it says it in this book, or at least I read it somewhere. Yes. I read about a man who was, he came onto the board. And the very first meeting that he was in, by the time the meeting had ended, they began to discuss this person and this person and then this person, this person, in a way that was not so good. It was executive session, and then he spoke up and he said, is it normative on this board to talk about a person in this way without them being here to defend themselves? It got mighty quiet in that board session. I think my point here is executive sessions ought to be executive sessions. There are issues to be discussed that the board alone has to talk about. But there are issues that don't need to be discussed there as well. Okay, that sometimes get going and around and around and around they go. And this man was just simply saying, that's not what a board's supposed to do. We don't come here to talk about a particular person when he can't defend himself at all anyway. We're here to try to help him to solve whatever difficulties he may have. And of course, that may call for some discussion. And finally, a summary. And if this all goes well, your meeting is completed. Number 5, future assignments. If this all goes well, and if a board is functioning well, that you get to the end and you say, okay, now we're meeting next month. And you'll notice that number 6 says agreement on next meeting date, place, and preliminary agenda. In a typical community, maybe this is not a problem. In our community, it was always, was it the second Tuesday? I've been away from Anchor so long, I can't remember. Is it the second Tuesday of the month? I think it was. That was the set time, and so your board members knew to keep that date. Now, if you administrate at Faith Builders, this is a much bigger problem. These people come from 300, 500 miles away, and you're trying to get this articulated. I was trying to get a conference call together here not too long ago, and I am not lying to you. It took me 3 weeks to get 4 men together on one night on a telephone. I was a bit disgusted, just to tell you the truth. Yes? Tried in the morning. Well, you know, I finally did say, just tell me when it suits. If it's at midnight, that's all right. I'll be there. That is a good idea. You mean like between 6 and 7? 5:30 to 6:30. I need to be real fair about this. Our board chairman was going through a very difficult time when his employees walked off on him and he had to kind of take over the responsibilities of his dairy herd, which is about 200 head or something like that. And so he was working 15 to 18 hour days. Keeping his cows in line. That's what really jammed it up. I couldn't get even a morning in. But I'm talking about a special circumstance, but I am pointing out to you that if you can't get your dates together
It's like you can't get anything to happen. What really frustrates me is sometimes the board will sit together. We set a date, okay, 6 months ahead and all of that. Finally, somebody calls you and says, it doesn't suit me. Oh. I don't know how your board's functioning, but if a date is set, mind you, it's a big help if everybody just does everything in their power to keep that date. Now, of course, there are emergencies, but it ought to be an emergency and not just some, oh, that was the only time we could go to Florida for a vacation. Boy, I really get antsy then. Come on, we set that date, you know, and let's keep that thing if we can. Now, of course, we don't want to be too tough on it because I know it might be me sometime who has an emergency come up and I have to change it. So don't misunderstand me here, but as board members, look, when the dates are set, do everything you can to keep them. Because I can tell you, and it's your job to get it rearranged then, okay, to call up the people and make the phone calls and find out when it suits them and when it doesn't suit them. That bites into your time to get that job done. And so when somebody changes the time on you, it's going to cost somebody else 2 or 3 hours to get it straightened out, in some cases longer. Not scolding, just suggesting. When the dates are there, keep them. And then the assignments, 5 and 6 kind of go together. It's essential that it just makes things run smoothly. If I know, the board chairman says to me, okay, can you have this ready for the next meeting? We're doing this building project. Could you have some blueprints or whatever? And I say, yes. He says to the next person, could you check on the heating situation? What's going to cost to replace the furnace? Yes, I can do that. And so these assignments are given. These people know. They're to have reports ready for letter B, the next meeting. These are the reports. That helps a lot. It does not do a whole lot of good if the chairman calls a day before the meeting and says, oh, by the way, I just remembered that we're going to have some kind of a price or something on that heating unit. Could you call Elmer Schrock and see if you get that thing together? And he calls Elmer, and Elmer says, well, yeah, man, give me a week and I could do that, but I can't do it right now. No, give those assignments at the end of this board meeting so that you're ready for the next one. And finally, elements of an effective board meeting evaluation. Are we really getting the job accomplished? How did we do this evening? All right, any questions on that? I have another sheet here, but it's kind of negative. I should have started out with it, but I didn't. Any questions on that? Any comments? Okay, maybe we'll just look at this last sheet, and then perhaps you'll have a few things before 12. What a board should not do. They should not fail to lead. I've already been emphasizing that. Rise up and be leaders. That doesn't mean that you are a highly motivational person so that when you get done talking, everybody is motivated. No, it simply means that you see that mountain out there a long ways off, and you know how to point the people that direction, and you know how to pull the resources together to get there. Don't fail to lead. A good question to ask yourself is there anything new, anything that we'd like to implement next year? You should be thinking about that now, okay? If you want that to happen, you should be thinking about it now. I say to the teacher trainees over and over and over again in Principles of Teaching, the clearest way to make sure an event happens is to schedule it, is to plan for it. If you don't schedule it, it probably won't happen, okay? Is this failure to lead? Number two, board should not get lost in details and concentrate on trivia. So here at Faith Builders, just an example. So we're going to renovate. We want to put a roof on the west wing over here before next fall, the Lord willing. Okay, it's going to cost some money and a lot of things like that. What should the board do? It's their job to get the materials in, not the materials, the resources in place. Whose job is it to decide the pitch? Whose job is it to make sure that the screws are here and to make sure all that stuff happens? That's our job here. That's not the board's job. That's trivia to them. Okay? They give some direction. They talk about how this may tie in with heating and so forth and so on. But once that's said and done, and we got that clear, it's our job to execute that, the administration here at Faith Builders, not the board. Okay? If they're fiddling around with that, it's trivia. It's going to take them forever to get it done. Number three, should not meddle at the operational level. I've been emphasizing that. Number four, should not fail to adequately focus on the future. Kind of ties in with number one. Number five, should not delegate without giving clear expectations and guiding policies. There's nothing quite like being the principal of a school and being told to do something, but not you don't really quite know what you're supposed to do. Okay, that's not so good. I'm just recalling, this might be a little sensitive, but just relax here while I tell you this story. This happened back in our community. There was a move among the leadership to require all of the boys and girls in school to wear black sneakers instead of, they weren't permitted to have any white on them, which was fine. I mean, the policy needed to be made. I sat in the meeting when this was all being discussed, and when it got finished, I had one question. I said, okay, so what am I supposed to do tomorrow morning when students come to school and if student C comes walking in and has white shoes on? You tell me what I'm supposed to do. Am I supposed to call their parents? Am I supposed to tell them to go barefoot for today? Am I just exactly what am I supposed to do? Delegate? It was my job. What I was telling them is, look, it's easy for you folks to make this decision in this meeting. It's very difficult for me to carry that out as the administrator of the school. I'm committed to doing it, but it's a job. So they were delegating it to me, but I wanted to know, what are your expectations? How do you want this to happen? Tell me, because it's going to be tricky enough without having some clear directions on it. They were good enough to do that. We worked our way through it. But I'm just saying, look, don't ever ask your administrator to do something if you haven't given him clear enough of an idea of how you expect him to get this done, because he can't get it done. Do not be reactionary and not sufficiently proactive. I heard Brandon talking about this. Don't raise your hands on this, but how many board members have had parents call you and say, look, something's got to be done about so-and-so and so-and-so. This almost always happens. Mature people have learned to sit back and relax and listen and think. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're not. Whatever you do, don't be reactionary. Being reactionary means to act immediately without thinking. Okay. Seven, a board should not manage instead of lead. Already have been emphasizing that. Eight, the board should not confuse action with effectiveness. This is true of any organization, and for any thinking person, it drives them nuts. There are people who think if the youth group's getting together and this is happening, you go into these evangelical churches and look at the list of things they have on the bulletin board. The ladies meet for this, and the men meet for this, and this happens, and you think, boy, there is activity here. But does that mean it's effective? Not necessarily. Okay, and that's what they're saying here. Just because you're generating activity doesn't mean anything. Well, it might mean something, but the question is, are you effective? Number nine, a board should not be too self-satisfied. And, oh boy, look at the last one. The board should not be too busy. Okay. Well, that's a mouthful from a person who hates board meetings. But anyway, now you tell me what you think and feel, or what your questions are here. Contradict something that I said. I don't feel like I have the final answers on this. I just kind of shared with you from my own experience. Questions? Jonas.
I guess I would suggest you mentioned smaller schools where there's no perhaps no male in the school or principal. Possibility between the point of having no one and having the board try to manage the whole group, you could at least appoint one person, whether it's a board member or whether it's another father, to actually get in that school on a regular basis, whether it's weekly, daily, or a little, to have the responsibility of helping out the teachers and the management thing. But if that is a board member, then he's wearing a different hat when he acts as manager. He's actually appointed to give authority to act as manager when he gives the title of principal or what. He's serving that role. Whereas board members themselves really
Good. And I've seen a lot of models that work kind of that way, where there's a small school and perhaps the board chairman sometimes does this. I know we'll come in twice a week or maybe even once a day or something like that and at least check in and see how things are going. Good. You're saying appoint somebody to do that. Excellent. All right. Any other suggestions or comments? I have some materials up here that I didn't feel free to copy because they're not original with me. I think you can write for them if you want to. They're from ACSI. Thomas A. Scott writes a little pamphlet here, School Board Operating Procedures. You're welcome to come and look at it a bit. And then I think there's an address on here somewhere. And if you'd be interested in it, it's not mine. That's why I don't feel comfortable about just copying it, giving it to you. And here's another one, A New Vision for Governing Boards. I did copy that one for myself, just out of a magazine. And, here's a really interesting one, Why Smart Administrators Fail. I found that one really intriguing. And let's see. Patterns of Organization and Procedure for Christian School Boards. This is by Paul Keenail. There's at least four of these. I'll just let them here on the desk if you want to kind of root through them a bit. I think you could get a copy of any of these from American Christian Schools International. They very likely give them to you, but I don't feel free just to run them off and give them to you. Okay? The task of leadership is visioning, aligning, and motivating. If you go to your school board's meetings and you do that, you'll be effective.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.